My central claim in this book is that these two trends, overprotection in the real world and underprotection in the virtual world, are the major reasons why children born after 1995 became the anxious generation.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you book talks and good reads and pretty much anywhere something can go viral, books. And we review them and let you know whether you should fit them into your busy schedule. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. And we have been saying we need to do a nonfiction book soon. And I feel like we've only ever really done memoirs as nonfiction. So we are bringing you a real, true nonfiction book today with The Anxious Generation. This is written like a research paper. It's essentially a research paper that was turned into a book, I would say, about how people our age who lived in a world where you were less free to play outside because parents were worried, but at the same time, the internet and handheld like internet devices were becoming a thing and social media. We ended up being anxious humans. And this walks you through why he thinks this, the author, Jonathan Haidt, thinks this happens. Mm-hmm. And at the end, there are some like propositions for ways parents, schools, and the government could proactively work against that.
Yes. And this book has been everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It won Goodreads nonfiction book of the year last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the people reading it are all the anxious generation.
Yeah.
Howdy.
And we're all raising kids now.
Yeah.
Are we?
Well,
this generation is having kids, just not us.
Yes.
I was going to say the younger millennials are now parenting them. And so, yeah. Yeah. All tech, the tech generations. All right. Do y'all have reviews?
I do. I have one review. It's a 1-star review on Goodreads, and it's very short and sweet. This could be an article.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think it has been basically an article and a podcast and on a million different things. Like,
he is milking this for what it's worth.
Yes. So I have 2 reviews, both 1-star, but I want to go next because one of mine is basically the same as one you just read, Catherine. It said, book that could have just been an Atlantic essay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Accurate. And the next one, the most boomer ass take on Gen Z. Kind of true.
Okay, I have 2. The first one I'm going to read because I feel like it was very similar to how I felt. It's a 3-star and it says, I think this is a more complex issue than the author suggests. Much of the information he presents is backed by correlational research, and I think there are extraneous variables at play in some of these cases. Yes, we can absolutely agree that phones, increased safetyism, and the digital world are having harmful effects on all of us, especially those who are still developing their frontal lobes. Yes, this would be a great starting place, but I think this author has oversimplified the issue and backed it with incomplete evidence.
Mm-hmm.
He does quote himself a lot, research or his own Substack, and I was like kind of like red flagging that a bit.
Yeah.
And okay, he cites the same research over and over again instead of...
Yeah. They're all correlational studies, yes.
And he sort of disclaims that a little bit, but not enough.
He does.
This other one I feel like you guys will like. It's a 3.5 stars, and it says, I feel like every point he made, someone had already told me or had been mentioned in a podcast because this book was everywhere. But it does make me very grateful that I don't want to have kids.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the hell out of that.
Yes. This just confirmed for me. No. Yep.
Before we like do our views, I feel like we should be transparent in when we were born and when we were in high school, because I feel like that does very much affect how we read this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Catherine's cringing. I am the old one. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not cringing.
Okay, so I'm a December 1995 baby, as some people would call a cusper or a zillennial.
Mm-hmm.
I do fall into this, but like on the edge of it, like when the first app integrated smartphones were coming out, I was in high school.
Yeah.
So I had phones in middle school. They were sort of internet connected early on. And then the iPhone came. Like, I remember the iPhone being released.
Yes. So I'm the next oldest, technically, even though I'm only slightly older than Catherine. But I was
a baby.
Yeah. I was December 1998. So I related to some of this, but I'm also kind of a cusper. Like, 1998 is still, like, definitely older Gen Z. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, that's part of, like, my issue with just, like, the grandioseness of some of the statements of this book, which you mentioned before, Caitlin. But, like, there's a lot of gray area in some of the things he's suggesting. Like, I think most of us had something in between a play-based childhood and a phone-based childhood.
Absolutely.
Yes. And, like, I know for me, like, I didn't go to a super wealthy school. And so even when I was in high school, a lot of the kids that I knew were on Instagram, maybe didn't have a mm-hmm. smartphone. So, like, just because I was born in this time frame didn't mean that, like, phones were as ubiquitous.
I was, like, a junior in high school when Instagram came out.
Yeah. Like, a lot of people I knew didn't get on Instagram until they were, like, 14, 15, 16. So,
yeah, social media was much more, like, it was present, but it was even more a thing in college, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm the baby. I was born in August 1999, so still kind of a cusper, because I think anyone born in the 90s has had a different experience than any of the Gen Z born in the 2000s.
Yeah.
I did actually get an Instagram when I was 13, because that's when it came out, was when I was 13. And all my friends,
told you a lot. That was me with Facebook.
I know. I was peer pressured into it for sure. And I got it before it was bought by Facebook, if that tells you anything.
We all did, I think.
Yeah. But, like, I feel like our generation was the one that kind of started it off almost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Before Facebook bought it and became, like, mega huge in every generation. But that being said, I didn't have an iPhone until I was in high school. My first phone was a BlackBerry flip phone. So if that tells you anything, like,
we should all say what our first phones were.
Okay.
Mine was also a flip phone.
In sixth grade, I was given a brick with numbers.
Oh,
nice.
I remember those.
It didn't even flip. I could, like, call my parents to pick me up from school. And that was pretty much it. Yeah. I had to pay per text on my first, like, three phones.
Oh, wow. Shit.
That's horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not ever have pay per text.
No.
But I did have a flip phone.
Yeah. Mine was a flip phone. And I.
Did you use T9?
I did.
Yes.
So that you could actually text.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, because mine was a BlackBerry. So I had the whole keyboard. Just really tiny, small. It was really tiny.
I did have a Sidekick at one point, and that was cool stuff.
I mean, I think a Sidekick was the coolest phone ever.
But mine slid. It didn't spin, so I don't really
That's sad.
There.
Yeah, bummer.
But we are not the Gen Z. Well, Caitlin's not technically Gen Z at all, but Casey and I are not the Gen Z that you're thinking about, that their first phone was an iPhone. They got it when they were in their teens, early tweens. No, parents were not going to let that
but
fly.
We're close enough that we have many shared experiences with what's talked about in the book. We just don't fit neatly.
Yes.
In. Yeah. I don't know if that made it more interesting or less interesting.
I think it made it more interesting, because I think we always, as a generation, get lumped into everything without any nuance to it, because I think there is nuance between even Gen Z. I think it's Gen Z is split in half almost.
Honestly, I think if you were born between, like, 95 and 2000, you experience something totally different than, like, it's a separate little subsect, you know, like,
yeah, I've been seeing,
we barely remember, you know, 9/11, but like, we also didn't start out with technology in our hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my Instagram was on my iPod Touch.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Oh, man. I remember my iPod Touch.
I love that thing. I saw this. I think it was a Wall Street Journal TikTok, and it was how they separated Gen Z. And is if you were in high school in 2016, that's kind of like the older Gen Z. And if you were in college during COVID, or like in college, COVID plus.
That kicks me out.
It does kick you out. But how they described it is the younger half of Gen Z is more conservative because they got into politics during Biden, and because teenagers are angsty and like to be adverse to whatever's in power, they became more conservative. The older generation of Gen Z is more liberal because they remember the first Trump administration because they were active on campuses. They were the ones doing the protests and the like pussy hats and the women's march and stuff like that. We remember those things. So yeah. They're more likely to be liberal. So literally they said they're two completely different generations in one because COVID completely screwed them up. And the two different presidents have completely diametrically opposed them.
Well, and we're also depressed and anxious.
Yeah. Common theme.
Okay, so now we've set the basis. The if you didn't already know all that about us, now you do. Mm-hmm. So let's give our star ratings for the book.
Did we say the overall Goodreads yet?
Oh, no.
Okay, so the overall Goodreads rating is 4.4 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.6 out of 5. So pretty good ratings. Who wants to go first?
I can. I gave it 4 stars because I do think if you are a parent or are looking to be a parent, you should probably read this book just so you don't commit the same mistakes that previous generations have committed, where you're like a helicopter parent because God, they're the worst. And you're not giving your kid unfettered access to the internet at like 2.
Yeah,
but I have critiques of the book as well, so they can't be a 5.
Right. I gave it a 3.5. I did enjoy the book in general, and I thought it posed some interesting ideas. It honestly did make me think more critically about my use of social media, which I think makes it worth reading. But I did think the actual research element of the book was a little weak at times, and also, it gets a little bit repetitive and boring the farther into the book you go. Like, it's not a super long book, but by the end, I was kind of like, okay, buddy, I get it. And so, yeah, I think he could have done a little bit more to liven it up. And like we already kind of mentioned this, but I think there were some generalizations that were a little too simplistic. This author, I do personally feel, is a little more conservative coded. Which is fine. You know, I think we should read lots of viewpoints, but there were times where I was like, okay, buddy, like this is like a really conservative viewpoint, more conservative than I think we necessarily need to evaluate this issue. But in general, I did think that it like sparked a lot of critical thinking, which I think is good.
I guess I'm the lowest. I gave it a 3. I thought that the beginning was really interesting, and then by the time it hit, there's like 4 parts, I think, and part 3 is pretty long, and I feel like we lost the thread in that one.
Yeah.
That's where I started getting really bored, and it felt like I was forcing myself to read a sociology textbook and not as interesting as some of my college sociology textbooks. But I do think it was still valuable to read. I think especially I work in the education sphere, specifically in social media, in education. So this was really interesting to me as an adult working in social media and as someone who wants the best for children in my school district. So it was a valuable read, but it could have been shorter and I got real bored.
I mean, it reads like a textbook. I would not be surprised if this was required reading for some college psychology classes.
Yeah. I had lots of highlights in the beginning of the book, and by the end, there's like many, many pages without. So like I got real bored. It got real repetitive.
It's real repetitive because it's written like a scientific paper.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, well, our discussion, non-spoiler discussion, is a little bit more interesting.
First of all, we can't spoil this book for you.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I don't think there... This is the one book where really there about is research. A spoiler alert section.
Right. So we're going to skip plot or character-driven.
What? It's character-driven, yeah. And we're the characters.
Is this play about us?
Yeah. Am I the drama?
Yeah.
I think I'm the drama. Okay, so this author has written other books. Have you guys read them? Had you already heard of them? And would you read them?
I think I have in passing heard of them. Mm-hmm. I'm not really interested in reading them. Like, this was my one and done kind of nonfiction research book for the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I have heard of his one book. I forget. Actually, I should just look one. Up. No.
The Righteous Mind?
No. What is the name? I should have looked this up beforehand. My bad. What is the name of this author?
Jonathan
Haidt.
While you're looking that up, I've not read any of his other books, and I don't really want to because I feel like he quoted them all in this book and I already read them by default.
I agree with that. Okay, so The Coddling of the American Mind is the one that I had already heard of. And I had heard of it because some of my family members have read it. And I just wanted to bring up that this author is like more conservative because these are like more conservative members of my family who had read this book and had agreed with it. And so Caitlin's review, I thought was, or my review that I read, one of the reasons is I read it is because the review was like the most boomer ass take on Gen Z. This man is like kind of a crabby boomer who's like complaining about Gen Z, and so I think that's kind of important because it just adds a little context to the book, like in the back of my mind when I was reading it.
He does have some good thoughts though, because he's raising Gen Z children.
Yeah, no, I still thought
like it's a weird dichotomy.
Yes, like I still thought the book was worth reading for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it just adds some extra context that he has already written a lot and like has a lot of opinions that I think formed the basis of this book, that he kind of talks about in that book about feeling like kids these days are like overly coddled and it makes them intellectually lazy, which I don't necessarily think is true and I think is an overgeneralization, but that is just kind of like something the author has written about before.
Side note, also interesting for his take on this topic, he wrote this book post-COVID, so there are like analysis of what happened during COVID woven in here.
Yeah, and I don't think that was one of my critiques, is I think he oversimplifies COVID where he's just like, it wasn't that impactful. I'm like,
I mean, he was like, we were already on this trajectory, it just sped it up, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess I see that a little bit, but
I feel like he was not making it a factor. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I think it's a huge factor.
Yeah. Okay, so next question. This is one of my bigger problems with the book, and one of the reasons why I just could not give it 4 stars is the pacing. Mm-hmm. How was the pacing for you guys?
Slow.
The beginning was good. I was interested.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I started getting into the meat of it, I was like, okay, I already heard him say this.
Basically, yeah. After chapter 6, then it goes downhill.
Before that for me.
Yeah, no, I had a very similar experience. I thought the beginning of the book was super intriguing, and then as we went, I got progressively less and less interested.
Yeah.
And it got harder and harder to like keep picking up.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like these nonfiction authors need a good editor to say like, we've already said this before, is there a way we can just delete this?
Right, like you don't need to write a book as if people are only reading one chapter. Like, you can write it as if they're reading the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you watch a documentary on this book? Interesting question, because I feel like there are similar documentaries out in the world.
I would watch a documentary on this book if it is not totally about the book and if it, like, follows actual people and how anxiety or how their cell phones have addicted them or how they're struggling. Because I don't think one of the flaws of this book is there isn't enough like actual stories in it of people who are impacted. They have like one in each chapter, which is not, I don't think, enough to explain the whole generation and the whole generation's experience.
Yeah.
I think this would be more interesting as like a documentary.
Interesting. So I watched The Social Dilemma, which is like very thematically similar. And I did really enjoy that documentary. And they focus a lot more on algorithms and how algorithms are toxic and kind of encourage like extremist thinking, especially with boys. And so I probably wouldn't watch a documentary of this because I would probably just recommend The Social Dilemma. But
yeah, that is a good one.
All right. Busy girl rating.
Oof. Like a two?
Yeah, second a two. It's interesting, but it's not one to like sit down and just blow through.
No. This is one you have to like let sit with you. And it's going to take a lot of time to read.
I didn't want to read it because I feel like I was doing homework for college.
Period. This did feel a lot like a sociology class.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. There were terms popping up that I was like, wow, I haven't thought about those terms in a long time.
Yes. You can tell he has a background in sociology.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to be a little more generous. I'm going to give it a three. The reason I'm going to give it a three is I actually think this is a book that's totally fine to DNF. Like, if you've gotten to the point where you feel like you kind of got the message, I like, honestly, you can just stop. And I think that's kind of good enough. Like,
you could also just read, he summarizes each chapter at the end of each chapter.
Yeah.
Really just read those and get
what you've done in 15 minutes.
I thought about doing that.
Yeah. Oh, I did too. We all thought about just like using his own SparkNotes version.
I was like, dude, you made it so easy for people to read your book.
Are we just calling ourselves out because we're the generation that grew up on SparkNotes?
Yeah, we can't.
Also, as I'm sitting there reading the book, I have the TV on in the background. My phone keeps dinging and my Apple Watch is dinging. And I'm like, well, I am the problem.
I was very cognizant of the fact that my phone was buzzing right next to me and I had the strong urge to pick it up when I'm reading this book.
At one point, I wrote in the margins, it's like talking about the iPhone and everything it caused. I was like, I read as I see a commercial for the new iPhone.
Yes, yes. Literally, we have no attention span anymore.
No, I'm a goldfish.
Also, I think my cat knew this book was like not the most exciting because Millie refused for this book to be on my lap. She needed to be on my lap anytime I picked it up.
Aw.
So there's that.
Okay, well, I think we're at our spoiler section.
Which is kind of not a spoiler section.
Kind of not a spoiler section.
So feel free to keep listening.
Right. Honestly, you can just listen to us talk about the book and then not read it. Because we're going to talk about the research and what he basically asserts in this book. Okay, so the first question is, you know, we are technically in this generation. That is the subject of this book. You know, how did you guys feel reading it? Did you think it was accurate and kind of spoke to your experience?
Yes and no. I think we've all said that already.
Yeah.
Yes, I know parents were much more conscious about like, oh, I don't want you to go that far. Like, stay where I can see you. But I ran all over my neighborhood with kids. Mm-hmm. It's not New York. I couldn't like go to the bodega by myself like he's talking about in this book. But like, I had quite a bit of freedom to play outside with neighbors and did that a lot and also played things like Webkinz.
Oh, my God, the Webkinz call up.
Was on Facebook chatting with friends before it got to be the Facebook it is today. Like, so like, yes and no. I feel like my parents were really good about making sure I was pretty unplugged despite us now having access to like video games and things. So, like, yes and no. I don't know. Even in, like, college and stuff, like, I was the weird kid who, I was in a sorority. And for a while, I would pay attention to, like, some things. But also, I was the kid in the woods hiking. And my sorority sister's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I just don't care as much. So, like, social media had a grip on me, but not the kind of grip it's describing in this book.
Yeah. I've always not really enjoyed Instagram and Facebook. Like, that's... And Snapchat, I just never could really get into it. I did it just to stay close to friends because I felt like I had to, but I was never truly addicted to them.
My sister, born in 99, just passed like a 1,000-day snap streak with someone.
That's insane.
Oh my God.
Oh, like, I thought we didn't use Snapchat anymore.
Yeah.
I really don't. I have one person who'll Snapchat literally, me every once in a while, and that's it.
Literally, I like met up with my niece really recently, and she's only 9 months younger than me, so she's a 2000s baby. And she uses Snapchat all the time. All of her friends do. And I'm like, how can we be so different?
That's crazy to me.
When I was a end of high school, having sixth graders at summer camp, a summer camp where you had no phones for a week, the sixth graders told me I was old because I had a Facebook and a Twitter.
Damn.
Like, we weren't actually that different in age, but that's how different, how quickly technology progressed. So like, it does apply to us, but it doesn't.
Yeah, because I like you were saying with like, I still had a play-based childhood because I lived on a cul-de-sac, and on Friday nights, we would all bring out our Razor scooters and go up and down the Razor
gang. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we would go to each other's pools, and we would just basically get to decide which house we wanted to spend the day at, depending on what activity we wanted to do. And yeah, sometimes those activity involved like video games, like the GameCube. But I feel like those aren't harmful because you're sitting there with your friends enjoying a game instead of being like,
and when mom said it's time for dinner, you left it behind.
Yes.
Right.
You listened to your parents. And like,
I felt like couldn't carry that stuff with you so much like at that time.
Well, and I wasn't sure what he meant by he was like, oh, yeah. And like, let them go do grocery runs and stuff like that. I'm like, sir, I live in a suburb of Austin.
That's
Texas.
What I'm saying.
There's
like,
no way I can
riding for New York City. We couldn't walk to the bodega. Like, that's not how that works.
The closest
I would have to cross two highways to get to a grocery store from my
The closest
home.
Grocery store is 10 miles away from my house. I ain't walking there. I ain't biking there.
Yeah. No, I had a similar experience. So like, again, like you guys, like I grew up in a city and the street in front of my house was really busy. And to get to any of my friends' houses, even though a lot of my friends lived close to me, I had to cross a really busy street. So, you know, my parents didn't necessarily like want me crossing those roads by myself when I was really little, but I spent like almost every afternoon at a friend's house. Like I had a very social childhood. And I really was not that into social media, as a younger person. Like I was on Instagram, but Instagram used to be like before influencers became a thing, it was like a totally different.
It was just your friends.
You just got to see pictures of what people were doing. It was so fun. Honestly, weird that's filters. Still how I use it. Mm-hmm. I don't follow really anyone. Very, very few people who I don't know personally.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what I use Instagram for, is I just like to see what people are up to.
Exactly.
And I know we're probably minority users also, which is funny because we use social media all day for work. Maybe
that's a huge difference, is that we're burned out by the time we get home. We don't want to use it ourselves.
About the only one I will use after work, TikTok. Like just for fun, is Instagram.
Really? Instagram,
and TikTok.
Not TikTok? I was
not
like, TikTok.
TikTok's not relevant when we were growing up, but it is now. And that's like not an everyday thing for me, for sure.
Yeah. I think the thing I thought was interesting about reading the book and comparing it to my own experience is that I actually think I've become more of a toxic user as I've gotten older. Like, as these apps have changed a lot and as my life has changed a lot, I feel like it actually has impacted me more as an adult than it did when I was younger. Because these apps have changed a lot. Like now, like when I was on Instagram when I was younger, I was literally just using it to like stay in touch with my friends, especially like my camp friends, right? Like people I didn't see at school.
Yep, exactly.
And so I didn't have this like toxic association with it. Now when I get on Instagram, I feel like I'm just being like given a barrage of advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that actually I do think has been bad for me. Like, to just be constantly like feeling like I'm just consuming capitalism all the time.
It's been bad for my bank account.
Yeah.
It's really good at targeting.
TikTok knows what I want.
Also,
when I want it.
I will say this is sort of off topic, but not. Twice in one day this week, I received ads on Instagram for things that I thought in my head and spoke aloud to no human being, never typed them in my phone, nothing. Twice in one day I received an ad for those two different things. And I was like,
yep.
It's listening.
Am I chipped?
Yeah.
What was it listening to, though?
Right.
It's freaky, guys. It's freaky. That's what we should be more worried about.
The algorithms, for sure. And I think that is an issue with this book. It does not blame the companies for what they're doing to this generation. It's
it does in like one chapter, but it rarely it briefly discusses the algorithm and does not discuss targeted advertising at all, which is what gets people our age.
And this is part of my big problem with the boy chapter specifically, is that I really feel like he actually undersold the impact on boys that modern technology is having.
Yeah.
Like, he only focuses on basically boys who are fully addicted to video games and acts like there's no other issues. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
The ones who live in their mom's basements. That's the only people he talked about.
Right. I was like, I'm sorry. There are a lot of men who are watching porn, and that is facilitating misogynistic attitudes towards women. Mm-hmm. And
I feel like toxic masculinity is on the rise. Thanks to TikTok algorithms.
And the algorithms, like, which this is what The Social Dilemma talks about, and why I think that's kind of a better example when it comes to boys specifically on this topic, is like, boys are literally encouraged to engage in alt-right content. Like, they can almost not be on social media without getting fed alt-right content. And it's like, I'm sorry, this book does not talk about that and how the algorithms are like creating insane political subcultures at all.
Well, because and this is a question I had because of how mad I was after reading the boy chapter, because it felt so like a nothing burger, like there was nothing there. Because he basically concludes that social media more negatively impacts girls than boys. And I disagree with that statement entirely. I think it negatively impacts girls in the self way, where it's like it's going to negatively impact the internal processes of the girl, but it won't impact her friends and family because it will just be her experiencing this. And that's not good. But I truly think that social media is being weaponized through the manosphere and through like alt-right content to make these misogynistic pigs that are going out and stabbing their classmates and committing acts of violence because they're out there.
I think there's an, like he says Gen Z, but he's really focusing only on people born between like 95 and 2005 or 2010. Like, we aren't addressing younger Gen Z, and definitely not, you know, Gen Alpha is in the mix now. So we aren't addressing that. And yeah, I think it's missing. Like we said, like there's such subsects in our generation of experience, and this kind of hits on, well, I don't think the end of it. The end
another of thing that's almost not in the book at all is TikTok, which I think has
mentioned
arguably,
and mentioned in a way that assumes you know everything about TikTok.
Yes. And I think TikTok is arguably the worst one. I mean, like the content it feeds you can get, this is why, because I'm not on TikTok. And the reason I'm not on TikTok is because my algorithm would feed me like really intense, like disgusting content, like immediately. And I know not everyone has
that problem. My algorithm is entirely like cats and books and farm animals, but that's because I'm an adult and know how to choose what I watch.
Well, I guess I'm not. But
you weren't on it very long.
You weren't on it.
But it was because I repeatedly, like, my algorithm would get so out of control. And like part of the problem is like I would wait for a video to be stitched and then it would just be the video. And then I was like, oh, I didn't want that actually. But it found out that I was interested in politics, and then it would like feed me crazy stuff. And I was like, this is bad. Like,
that's the other thing is, as a journalist background, I fact check everything I see.
Yes.
If I'm like, that seems strange, I'll go fact check it. And people aren't. Media literacy is not a thing.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I,
which could have been a whole chapter.
Yes.
I truly think that the rise in the anxieties of our generation is because we are willing to believe anything anyone tells us. And I think that comes from the lack of civics classes in high school, where you don't learn how to fact check a source, how to know what is right and what it's wrong, and how our government works.
Media literacy wasn't super necessary to our parents. Mm-hmm. So they weren't really teaching it to us.
No.
Yeah.
You know, some of us have figured it out on our own, but a lot of people just believe what they're fed still.
And I do think that kind of leads into another one of my problems in the book. Obviously, I think social media can be particularly harmful to children. But I actually think he really undersold the way it can be toxic to adults. Mm-hmm. He kind of made it sound like, oh, you turned 16 and like, yeah, it's dangerous, but now you're so much better equipped. I was like, I don't actually think that's true. Like, adults are not media literate. We're seeing them believe in crazy conspiracies, like, you know, repost crazy stuff on Facebook. Like,
yeah, I guess you're leading me into that is like, he's writing the anxious generation, but he's writing as if we're all still teenagers. We're not.
Yeah.
We're adults now.
So, like, where are we now?
Right.
He's saying keep other kids from doing this, but where are we now?
All of his conclusions were, how do we protect the next generation? I was like, so are you just, like, discounting us and saying there's nothing we can do to save you?
That's how it kind of felt. And I think that's probably why I felt unsatisfied at the end, is because that's not where I thought we were getting from the title of the book.
Well, I'm also, like, I actually think that, like, most of my childhood and my life was the ideal presented in the book. Like, mm-hmm. I had a very play-based childhood. I really wasn't on social media till I was older. Yep. And, like, it didn't save me at all.
Right. We're all white. We're all white in the correct socioeconomic class. Like, yeah. We all had a very ideal, good parents that were paying attention to us. You know, two-parent households, and we have siblings. And, yeah, but we all still have anxiety.
And also, like, I think part of what has made these apps so toxic is A, the algorithms, and B, the development of influencer culture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which creates this, like, put out an ideal version of your life, like, problematic diets, body image stuff. And that stuff didn't really develop until, like, 5 to 10 years after. And so I'm like, again, I'm not saying that I don't think social media had a negative impact on our generation. I think it did. Mm-hmm. But I think he puts a lot of this stuff on social media, like, being brand new and just starting. And that's what kicked all of this off. When I'm like, I actually just don't really think that's true, because social media, the way we experience it today, like, evolved. It did not begin this way. Mm-hmm. And
no, Instagram, you literally could post a photo and that was it.
And then you could like it.
And, like, the whole idea that you only posted these, like, great, super curated pictures of yourself didn't even start till later. Like, when Instagram launched, you just posted the fuggliest little selfies of yourself.
Because it was all, like, you were just playing with the filters, like, so you could put a rainbow on your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, all this stuff that I think really made it toxic didn't start till much later.
I think, yeah, throwing in the chapter on body image and stuff felt weird, especially because I feel like the main issue now that we need to protect the next generation from is not desire to look like someone. It's desire to be like someone and have the things someone else has. It's moved from body image to, like, socioeconomic jealousy, wanting things. Trends come and go so much faster than they did when we were younger, material things. I also do think it wasn't the focus, because I think the thing he hit on that was the most interesting was the fact that opportunity cost, we are losing our time to our devices and therefore losing our relationships and less quality time with friends and people who are going to develop us and grow us, and less time mediating for ourselves. That's where I think he hit it on the nose.
Yes, I agree with that.
I think
people are more willing to talk on texting instead of face-to-face. And that's a problem because you're not learning how to be a person.
And that encompasses, you know, YouTube, video games, boys and girls. Like, that's where we're at. I think the girls and boys chapters were a little weird.
Yeah.
Also, there's a Venn diagram. Catherine and I were both video game kids growing up, too.
Yes.
Healthy, not addicted video game kids, but we both still play some video games. Like,
yeah, I was the tomboy growing up. I hung out with boys more than I did girls because I found that girls were way too psychologically insane.
There are,
like,
plenty
insane
of boys who are stuck on social media.
Yes.
However, I do think the one interesting thing was that LGBTQ teens are the ones who benefit and are most badly affected by social media, because it provides them A, a community, but B, a place for hate. That was
that makes sense.
They don't fit in the Venn diagram, I feel like.
Yes. But no, I totally agree with you, Caitlin. I think the opportunity cost part is the part to me that felt the most true. Mm-hmm. Because that's also the part of this book that I felt resonated with my own life, right? Like, and it's not just this guy who's saying it. Like, I've read multiple articles now about how we're being much less social than other generations, like adults, you know? We're hanging out with other people, spending time with other people way less than in previous generations. But again, this guy blames this all on social media, but I actually think a huge driver of that is TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because I have actually personally now banned myself from watching TV by myself, because I would get home from work and I would turn on the television and I realized I was actually taking up a lot of my time because I just wanted to relax. But it's sort of like that candy, right? Like you just fill it up with time, but it doesn't actually like make mm-hmm. you happier.
Yeah, that's why I got into reading so much, because I realized during COVID, sitting home alone, which like, yeah, there wasn't a lot else to do. But I realized like I watched the entirety of Game of Thrones in like 2 weeks. That's yeah. not okay.
Yeah. Yeah, me and my roommates watched all of Grey's Anatomy.
Yes, me and my roommates watched every season of Love Island.
Yeah, so I just like, I realized it myself. And we're, I feel like we're in this special, being those cuspers, we can realize these things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man. So I started reading books. And right. here we are today, you know.
And I'm like, I hate that this book almost felt like it was blaming kids and parents for this situation. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but it's these corporations that are preying on these kids and these parents, and knowing that these parents don't know these things about this. And the fact that Facebook, like the whistleblower literally said that Facebook is going to target 4-year-olds. Are we not sounding the alarm saying that is fucked up?
And the few times where Zuckerberg and the Instagram creator were quoted saying, it's like, oh yeah, we're doing this intentionally to get people where they can't get off of this. And that's totally okay. Yeah. That's where we should have been focused. And it was so minimal in here.
Yeah.
I was like, this is not our fault. We are literally being trained like rats in a cage. He told us that in the book. Yeah. We are rats in a cage being trained to be addicted to this stuff and get dopamine hits.
You don't blame the addict. You blame the drug dealer.
Correct.
Yes.
So there needed to be more of that too. I still learned a lot around that.
Yes.
But like, there should have been more emphasis on.
But the solution,
not parents who were afraid of pedophiles. Yeah. It was the people who created it.
Yeah. The solutions he came up with were, parents, here's some things you need to know. And Congress, let's raise the age for like opening accounts to 16. I was like, how about we penalize these corporations for preying on these kids and breaking the law?
He also barely mentioned like parents feel bad when their kids are like, but everyone else is doing it. So unless everybody all does it at once, which he talked about, it's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So parents shouldn't be the ones with this burden on them.
Right. Okay. This is one more problem I want to say I had with the book. So he pinpoints this year that like social media has developed, and he's like, the mental health outcomes start being so bad, and he like kind of pins this all on social media. I think this is such an overprivileged like summation, because I'm sorry, if you did not go to a wealthy school, none of those kids had iPhones.
Nope.
Like assuming that, oh, this became super widespread in this year, I was like, not if you're poor, not if you went to a regular public
school. I was still well off, and my parents were like, you don't need an iPhone, you're a teenager.
Right. Like at this point, there were still a lot of parents, like my parents could have afforded to give me an iPhone, mm-hmm. and they were like, that's stupid, you're a child, we're not gonna pay
you
that.
Have your iPod Touch, you're fine.
Yeah.
Like I think his assumption that this became widespread this early was just not true.
Yeah.
Not enough on the Google Play Store either.
Yeah, I will say, I went to a wealthy school, everyone did have iPhones, like I'm going to say that. I didn't get one till I was like 16, so to be fair, I was older, but still young. Right. I saw that people were being cyberbullied online. I saw that girls were posting very inappropriate content to their Finstas, and that's what caused a whole scandal where basically the entire cheer team and the entire dance team were caught with bong pictures all over the goddamn place. And that's when they learned the lesson of don't fucking post things.
Okay, so like I drove a car before I had an iPhone. In middle school, there was a girl in my middle school who sent nudes. I don't know how quality they were, you know, at the time, but like it was a huge deal at the time. So like also some of these things happened before the iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
People were addicted to texting already, you know?
Yes. Texting was not new.
Yeah.
The idea that people weren't talking to each other as early as like elementary school, I was like, nah, the bus rides were so much fun. We talked, we like listened to our iPod touches and like listen to music together and talked like we weren't addicted yet.
Right. Now, I do think that's different for the kids of today. Like
my sister as a fifth grade teacher has students who, even if they don't have a phone, they probably have a smartwatch. So she'll like, for example, send a kid to the nurse. The nurse will say, okay, she's fine. I'm sending her back to class with some Tylenol. Next thing you know, the kid's mom is calling, what are you talking about? My kid's sick and you won't send her home. Well, the kid has used their smartwatch to contact their parent.
And I don't disagree with that very depressed and anxious generation because of some of the smartphone technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that COVID has caused kids to lose the ability to learn how to be a proper human.
Here's what I tell people all the time in my job in education. And all the teachers, I think, will agree with me because it's a problem we're having currently behavior-wise at all the grade levels. The kids who spent many of their like formative years at home during COVID learning online lack empathy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There's one child who refuses to acknowledge my sister's existence, and the teacher. Like, it is crazy. And I see, like, that's kind of what he's getting at. He just never nails it on the head. Is like, you need these synchronous activities, which I thought the idea of like spirituality, even as like a sports game, being together and like moving the same way is so necessary. And I'm like, okay, you nailed that part, but that's not even like us, because we weren't COVID babies.
No,
exactly.
There are some kids, yes, who were already on that path before COVID.
Right.
But it was less so. Now there's a huge epidemic of behavioral problems in our public schools.
It's so bad, guys. It's so bad.
Because I agree with you. I think the empathy thing is a huge piece. And I agree. I think he like danced around it, but didn't quite nail it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I see it all the time in my job, because I have to be like on Twitter for work, because a lot of political reporting happens on Twitter. People on Twitter are so chronically angry about everything. If you live on Twitter, you would think the world is burning down every second of the goddamn day. You would think your neighbors are evil. You would think the world is out to get you and every politician on earth is out to get you. And it's all a grand conspiracy. The reporters, the politicians, like everyone in your life, scientists are all out to get you.
Another thing I would add to that is, thanks to TikTok, especially, people feel like you can say whatever the hell you want in the comments section with no repercussions. And that has transferred over to real life.
Yeah. It has.
Oh, this
chronic rage. When you spend so much time online and you're a child, you start to think that's what the world is, when that's not what the world is. Like, but it goes back to the problem of that. It's more about the opportunity cost. Like, when children are living much less in the real world, they're not disconnecting from that rage. Mm-hmm. And that idea that that's how you communicate with people is through anger.
And but once again, he dances around it and doesn't nail it on the head. The fact that we can draw that conclusion from our lives and pairing it with reading this book is like, okay, I guess he got the job done, just like not as directly as I wish he would have done.
And also, this isn't impacting just our generation. I see 40-year-old men who are literally calling my news station to call our weather people sluts for wearing a dress. And then when we actually have a conversation,
like 80-year-old women doing that.
And 80-year-old women. But when we actually call them back and say, okay, what's actually your feedback? Like, let's actually hear this out. They're very nice about it. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it like that. Because they think that they're talking to a robot. They're not talking to another human. But when you put a human in front of them, they get all defensive. And they're like, oh, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. Because there's an actual cost for your bigotry.
Yeah. So, but I agree. That's part of what I didn't like about the book, is I actually think these things are impacting everyone and not just children.
And I don't totally agree that social media has caused us to be more anxious. I just think our generation is more likely to be in touch with our feelings and willing to go get help for it.
I do think, to an extent, we because of having access to the internet and to smartphones with social media, we do spend a lot of our time there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that probably does make us anxious to some extent. I think there are people who do get anxiety from not getting enough likes, things like that. I think mm-hmm. there are people who spend so much time playing video games, they're too anxious to talk to real people. I think, though, where most of us are getting our anxiety is because we aren't making those real world connections as much as people used to, is what he kind of talks about. And he also says, like, at one point, he's like, there are all these horrible world events happening, but those are correlation, not causation.
Your entire thing's correlation. Well,
they definitely have a weight. Like, I know every generation has their events, but I feel like they're just more frequent. Yeah. And no wonder, like, that adds to it. And you see it on your smartphone, on your social media.
I mean, like, my TikTok account is just people my age going, I would like to not live through historical events anymore, please and thank you.
Yeah, so like not only are you seeing it on the news, you're seeing it on your phone. I think the historical events do play into it more than he allows in the book.
Yes.
Because I think people can get depressed and get PTSD from these things.
Yeah. And I also think
we are more in touch, like you said.
Yes. Right. Like Caitlin, you're saying too, like if you're always on your phone, there's no break from it.
Mm-hmm. Bad news is there just as much as the good news.
Right. And I do think it's like everything together. Like it's TV and video games and social media and texting. And like you're constantly getting like a barrage of like fads and things you need to buy and advertisement constantly. And then also seeing super idealized version of other people's bodies and their lives. And then you're also being hit with a barrage of like, here's all the bad things happening. And also people are super angry and speaking to each other in like really horrific ways and like not having productive discourse and like just doing like outrage porn. And so
we always have TVs on in rooms and we work on laptops and like, it's just,
you can never disconnect.
Right.
Right. And if you do, then your mom texts you, is like, are you dead?
Yes.
Yeah. No, mom.
Yes.
Yeah. I had one day where I was like, I'm just not going to use my phone. My mom texted me like 4 times thinking I was dead.
Yeah.
One time I wasn't answering texts. Honestly, fair this one, but this is how extreme it is. I wasn't answering texts. I'd accidentally slept through my alarm, apparently, and I was supposed to meet my parents. And they could see on my phone that my location showed that I was at home. And I wasn't answering calls either. I don't know how my do not disturb, they can get through that. So I was like, just out. Next thing I know, they're walking into my bedroom, scared the crap out of me. But they like thought I was dead. So they showed up and I was like, I don't know if this is bad or good.
Mm-hmm.
Also, simply because I didn't pick up the phone when we were kids, the landline rang and you're outside. You're not picking it up.
Right. I do also think, like, speaking as an introvert, I actually find the constant need to be in communication with people very stressful and anxiety-inducing.
Yes.
The fact that I have to date that way
is terrifying.
Horrible.
Exhausting. Horrible.
I hate online dating apps because it's the worst. Because you have to start a conversation.
Really included a chapter on that, too.
Yes.
We can't form real relationships because it's easy to just swipe left and right.
Yes.
Because he mentions it. He mentions swiping left and swiping right in the boys section, but he doesn't go into it. And I'm like,
no, it's so easy to like talk to someone for a little bit and be like not feeling it.
You can ghost them.
It's
acceptable. And objectify people. Like, it's so easy to just like totally objectify people. Yeah.
How often is the first message I get, you up? Who the hell are you? I don't know.
Right.
I don't get those, luckily, because I'm very picky. Too picky, aka still single, turning 30.
But it's a thing, like, feeling like I'm never to me, getting on Instagram feels like social interaction. It drains my battery. Texting drains my social battery.
When I come home, I want to turn off my phone. But if I want to keep my friends or if I want to date someone, I have to be on it. Yeah. I do say something he glosses over is I do keep in touch with so many more people. Mm-hmm. Because of social media, like people from college who I would have lost contact with if it weren't for social media, because I'll just every once in a while exchange a little Instagram DM with someone when I see they're doing something cool, or like ask like, oh my gosh, like where'd you get that, or like how are you doing. Like I do see a benefit. Mm-hmm. You just have to like put in the effort, and it is effort.
It is effort.
And I have. So I did recently delete Instagram. I would get back on it to post for this podcast, but that's it. And it actually did help. Just feeling like I wasn't as connected to people. Like, it kind of sucks to not get updates on people I care about.
One of my best friends uses no social media anymore. She's in a biking club. She's in a kickball league. Yeah. She goes to trivia nights. She's with people 24/7 as an introvert. No, but she's so happy.
Like, I actually found by decreasing that kind of like artificial social interaction that makes me so tired, I actually do have more energy for in-person interactions. And like, my friends know I answer my texts every 3 to 5 business days. Like, if you want to talk to me,
period.
If you want to talk to me, you also
see our Instagram. We suck at it.
Yeah, we suck at keeping that up to date. And that's why we're all introverts.
Right. And so when you're talking about you're tired too, the sleep part he talks about is really correct.
Yeah.
Yes. I also thought that was extremely
super good point. Like, it's like he's just so close to everything I have feelings on. He just doesn't.
Right.
Get it perfectly. And it's missing a few tiny things like dating apps. And
I find that a majority of our generation has a deal of insomnia or some degree of insomnia where it's hard to fall asleep. When you do, you are like in and out of sleep where you wake up every 2 hours, or like it's just hard to maintain good quality sleep.
Yeah. I had to stop drinking caffeine because I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I got a sound machine recently, thanks to all the people watching TV in my apartment complex I share walls with, and it has been a game changer. But it's pretty bad when I have to turn on white noise to tune out other people's TV noise.
Yeah, apartment life. Yeah.
I will say there is something I think this book did really hit a nail on the head, at least from my experience, because I was in a very affluent area in a very affluent district that was very, very heavily like, you have to get into Harvard or bust. You have to be in these top percent schools. So my mom was always the black sheep of the district because
she was.
Yes, yep. Of course.
That's
because when everyone else during the summer was taking test prep classes and was doing all of these like educational immersion programs, I was going to summer camp.
Oh, yeah. Three. Same. I was at summer camp.
I had
no internships.
Time of my life. Yeah, I had no internships.
To this day, I've never had an internship.
I've never had
an internship. That's kind of crazy, actually. Yeah. I have done internships.
But that, like, my friends would be forced to do like
ACT prep.
Or yes. And stuff like
summer
that.
School.
There's not to say that I didn't do tutoring or I had to do Kumon, which I think was the fucking most waste of time I've ever done in my life. And I think this book proves it. And I was going to show it to my mom to be like, fuck you for making me do this. but I was struggling in math. So that's why it was a necessary thing.
And it mentions the benefit of things like Khan Academy for people in a lower socioeconomic class. Great. That's still time on a screen.
Replacing a kid's free time, true free time, like you do not have school, and replacing it with like educational learning things, not helpful. And
things I kept noting, competitive sports was not mentioned. It was talking about, you're just playing outside less because your parents are scared. I'm like, no, your parents don't want you to break your arm or else you're never going to be a D1 baseball player.
Yes.
Yeah.
Half these kids live now.
I mean, half of them are getting burnt out by the time they hit high school and they just quit because they
have social media accounts for recruiters to follow them now. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, I think parents are putting all of their hopes and dreams onto their children and living vicariously through them. And that's not okay. Like, the kid needs to be choosing these things. And I would also see people forced to do like violin, forced to do things that Harvard would like to like expand your resume. And my mother would talk to other mothers and they would get aghast that she was just like, I just let her choose what she wants to do.
Yeah.
To an extent, I was encouraged to try many things, but I also was allowed to quit them.
Yes. Right. I mean, I did soccer. I did gymnastics. I did volleyball. I did swimming. I did a lot of things.
Yeah.
But they would be for short periods of time until I figured out I didn't like
them. I was in so many after school clubs and so many youth group things that I was always with other kids. So I thank my parents for that.
Yes.
They ran me so many places.
I was exhausted.
I had a social life, which apparently this book is saying a lot of kids didn't.
Yeah.
Yes. I do think that, like, I agree with that. And, like, I'm glad you brought it up, Catherine, because I do think there's been this, like, professionalization of childhood.
Oh, yeah. A resume.
High-income parents, yeah, especially literally are obsessed with managing their children. Like, they're not a parent, they're a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
when he talks about boys getting back to trades, and I'm like, girls can do it too. Everybody needs to get back to trades, which our district is currently emphasizing, which I love.
Yes. I actually think that his chapter on boys was also, like, maybe a little overly sympathetic to boys.
Yes.
And also, yeah, like, I can only speak to my personal experience. This is anecdotal. It's not data. I think the problem with boys not succeeding in school has to do with their parents and how they're raised and not with social media. Yep. Like, I just know the girls I was raised with, we had very high expectations of us. Like, mm-hmm, we were expected to get A's. We had chores. We had social lives too, but like, we were held to a high standard and were expected, mm-hmm, to perform. A lot of the boys that were in these families too were not held to that standard. Mm-hmm. And I think if you raise your boys with, you know, they're the fucking kings of the house and they get to kick their feet up while their sister does all the chores and is expected to make great grades, like, yeah, this is the result you get.
I will say my cousin is, mm-hmm, 16, a junior in high school. A boy. my uncle works in cybercrime law.
Mm-hmm.
So they just really aren't on social media, my cousins.
Yeah.
He is top of his class, varsity athlete, has a social life,
mm-hmm,
turning out fine without a ton of pressure being put on him. And it probably is because he plays Xbox and watches a lot of sports. So there is screen time. But he's not on social media.
Right.
I think it does help to an extent.
I would say this author took the position that, like, schools aren't catering to boys anymore. And I was like, I'm just sorry. That's not true.
He kind of was also like, boys are either nerds who never leave their bedroom or they're out there, like, bro-ing it up. And yeah. I'm like, there are so many, like, my cousin who, and like, I, yeah, no, don't.
And I will say to your point, Casey, because this hits the nail on the head, I love my nephew and I'm calling, mm-hmm, him out right now because he'll laugh about this, I swear. He is now in college and I think he's going to be a senior next year. His roommates were telling me a funny story about how he didn't know how to use the washer dryer in their apartment. Like, he didn't know that you needed to clean the lint trap after every single use because his mommy always did it for him.
Yeah.
And he didn't know how to do, like, that you couldn't mix, like, pink things with white things. And, like, he made, like, an entire thing pink. And he is just a mess. And my sister, my mom was helping him out move in because he goes to UT Austin, which is right down the block. And he was like, just had like a few things that he just wasn't putting together. And he just kind of like sat down. And my mom was like, are you just not going to do those things? And he was like, no, I'm going to wait for my mom, my sister to come. She really likes doing those things for me. And it's true.
Yep.
Because she does. Because my sister would laugh about it, but like they are very nice boys. They're very nice kids, but he's kind of clueless when it comes to like basic manual chores.
I will give you one. This is a real story. A friend in college, a guy friend, didn't leave his apartment for like a week, not for classes, not anything, because he was playing Fortnite 24/7.
That's crazy.
Didn't have a lot, you know. Well-off family,
mm-hmm,
not a lot of requirements to, like, he didn't have to go work, things like that. It was to the point his parents came down, took his gaming system, and his roommates had to lock their bedroom door so he couldn't go play on theirs.
Okay, that's an addict.
That's bad.
So, like, we have a spectrum here. All aspects are real.
Right. Because stories like Catherine, I'm sorry, I hear that a lot.
Yeah,
women are much less likely to get that treatment in their families.
No. Nope.
And if you raise your son like a baby, he's going to grow up to be a baby. So.
And you do know if a girl sat in her room like that and played Fortnite and never went to class and was failing things. Oh, the pain brought down would have been so much worse.
It would never happen.
Never happen. And I, to be fair, my nephew's friends gave him so much shit for it. He changed his behavior and they were more self-sufficient and were forced to do chores in their family. And so they taught him how to do it and they laugh about it today and like egg him on it all the time. And to his credit, he has learned and he does it on his own now.
Right.
So learnable behavior.
Right. Right. Anyway, let's get off this tangent.
I think the only question we haven't touched is what we think of his recommendations at the end of the book for how to change course on the issue. We have mentioned our criticisms of, is it too late for us?
There were no recommendations for us.
I did find this part interesting. It was the most interesting part as someone who works in the central office of a school district. So what do you think?
I do think 13 is too young for people to be signing agreements with a company and signing contracts. I think, yeah, probably they should be raised to 16. I don't think you need a social media account until you're 16. Sorry, you don't. And I do think that there needs to be more regulation on companies to make sure they're actually verifying ages, because they're not. You can lie. It's so easy to lie.
Yeah.
And I do think that we need to find ways to content block like porn websites from teenagers. They don't need that. And I think AI, we really need to do some AI legislation in our country, because we're just letting it fly blind in the wild, wild west. And that's going to cause a lot of issues in the future.
Kind of. I know not every district's the same. The district I work in, we are a one-to-one district. Everyone has their own technology. AI is being incorporated so incredibly well in a lot of our curriculum that I am learning things myself. I know not every district's doing that. We're also one of the districts moving to get away from standardized testing and moving towards market value assets, and also encouraging kids to do internships and trade school stuff during high school, not get to college and be like, oh, I didn't like doing that. It's like, we're on the path, but like, I will say AI is not as much of a wild, wild west in education as you would think.
I do think that's very district dependent, because I'm thinking about my mom's district and I'm like, cringe. But okay. I do agree. I really liked his recommendations that companies should actually be held accountable for how old people are on their sites. Again, particularly with porn. I'll make another recommendation here. The documentary Hot Girls Wanted is really good. It's about the porn industry.
Yeah.
Another documentary, part of why the boys section made me so mad is because I watched this documentary and they talk a lot about the impact that porn has on young boys. So I'm actually super passionate and interested in that issue. I don't think children should be able to watch porn. And I think it would be really good and better for our society if 13-year-olds were not able to open their own Instagram account. I agreed with that one a lot. I think the only other thing that I would even, you know, comment on is something we've already said, but I do think these companies need to just start being held accountable for targeting young kids. Like, cigarette companies are targeted for it, which is mentioned in the book. Like, Congress cracked down on that because it was getting really bad. I think we're at that point. Like, you should not be designing apps to literally addict 12-year-old girls. Like, that is not ethical, and it's time to step in. Like, let's do that.
I do think the most feasible of the suggestions is the cracking down on age verification at the company level. I don't think our government will do anything collectively right now.
No.
I also think the parent thing is a collective action problem that will never get solved. Yes. Too many differences in states, race, socioeconomic, you know, like, it's never, that's going to continue to be a collective action problem. I did find very interesting, and this is a current movement happening, phone-free schools, which when I was in middle school, you weren't allowed to have your phone. High school, it had to be in your locker. That's we were fine.
We did not have that
because not everybody had phones. It was unfair for certain kids to, you know, be on their phone all the time. Some of our schools are starting to move that way, specifically middle schools. There are these bags now you can get that your phone gets sealed in. You can carry around your bag, so you have your phone, but there's a device needed to unlock the bag. Kind of like if you buy like a dress and you have to get the safety tag off, it's that kind of security system.
Yeah.
I do think that's feasible, except that we have so many parents like, well, but if I need to get a hold of my kid. And that is where the issue lies, is it's we're back to the safetyism of the current parenting class. So that's the collective action problem I think is most feasible to change, is parents saying it's okay for my student to be unplugged at school so they can learn things and go to recess.
Phone-free schools makes perfect sense to me.
My sister's school does 2 recesses.
Good.
They have a lot more behavior kids. It's great. And I do think our playgrounds are super safe now, which we have to do because we'll get sued. Yeah, but parents, if they could chill, you know, we could have a lot more fun. I think our kids would be unplugged.
The moral of the story is parents need to take some CBD oil and just calm the fuck down, because I do think they're helicoptering and they're being
the odds your child is going to get hurt or kidnapped is actually very low.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're listening to Law and Order SVU a little too much.
Yeah.
So I do agree with that. I agree with you too. I don't think the phone collective action issue is going to get solved. I do think the one that we could maybe get parents to agree on and do more is just giving their kids more responsibility early. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is another thing I feel
like I don't see. She's like, can't build my own college furniture.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that was part of the book that I did feel like I see a lot, actually not as much with our generation. Maybe it's just because I'd never would pick friends that can't be independent. But if you go like my sister's age, my sisters are super independent, but that age group, like 3 years younger than me and lower, a lot of those kids have independence problems and it's very noticeable.
My sister is a 99 kid and I don't know if it's being second child or what. She's not the most independent person. Like she can function fine, but like, if she has she's never lived alone. If she has a choice to be with someone or be alone, she's absolutely not going to be alone.
Yes, I have noticed it. There are some people I work with just in the greater press corps that are younger, and the way they handle their like workplace issues are absolutely insane. Like they genuinely can't handle problems by themselves, and it's so bad. So I really think that's something that we could address with parenting, of just letting your children solve problems by themselves. And I also really agreed with the fact that that makes you feel better about them yourself.
Yeah.
Like one of the most challenging things I ever did when I was 18 was solo travel, but it made me believe in myself.
Also, as a parent, then when they go away out of your household, you're like, no, I know they're capable of doing that.
Yeah. You feel better, and they're not calling you every 2 seconds everyone. Crying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Must be nice. Yeah. I mean, we're all independent people.
Yeah.
So like we're saying
probably
this.
All too independent, but yes.
Yeah.
So we're a little biased.
Trade-offs.
I still call my mom every day though.
Yeah. I mean, I talk to my mom every day. I talk to my parents every day. We joke around.
Right. We text.
Yeah.
It is big eldest sibling / raised mostly an only child energy to be so independent. Okay.
We're all still single too independent.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Living with a person, ew.
Yeah. I think that's basically our discussion. Do you guys have recommendations? I want to go first because I already recommended 2 things. Okay. I'm going to recommend 2 documentaries, which I already mentioned, but one is The Social Dilemma and then one is Hot Girls Wanted, which both talk extensively about online culture and how it's impacting people.
I'm also going to recommend a TV show. It's on Netflix and it's called Adolescence. It is quite a interesting 4-part miniseries that dives into how a 13-year-old boy can get sucked into the manosphere, and he commits an act of violence against one of his female classmates. And the whole series is talking about the fallout of it and how it's set in the UK and how he was radicalized at the age of 13.
I'm going to recommend the only book. I'm going to recommend The Future because it glossed over so quickly the things the tech companies are actually doing to keep people addicted to the products. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario, that's the future. So Naomi Alderman.
Oh, one more recommendation, Black Mirror.
Shit.
It is all about like basically what will happen to technology and to us if we don't like have more guardrails and think more critically. And
Those very are some good. Fucked up episodes.
Also generally really depressing. So just, you know that going in, but very good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it.
Yeah. Give us a follow. Busy Girls Pod, pretty much everywhere. BusyGirlsPod.com. Send us your recommendations. Let us know if you liked us doing a nonfiction book. You know, it's very different from what we normally do. So like feedback is great. But yeah. Rate and review, and we'll catch you next time. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.